Welcome to Rise. I'm Liz.
And I'm Julia.
The podcast where we talk about the big things and the little things
that help us to overcome life challenges and ultimately thrive. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Rise. And we'll just get straight into it because we have another guest with us today who Liz will introduce for us.
Yes, hello, and just welcome to Rose. We have Rose Long with us today, who is my yoga teacher, my former yoga teacher when she's in Liverpool. And I'll just give you a little bit of background about Rose. Rose is a Kundalini yoga teacher, and she's trained in the science of yoga. And she's a life changes coach with a raft of experiences from running a successful social enterprise to doing VSO work abroad. To delivering workshops and recovery yoga and addiction therapy, to even surviving thyroid cancer. And she has a raft of qualifications that include everything from being a trained teacher. She's trained in human rights education. She's trained in self-expression leadership, coaching, Kundalini yoga, recovery and addiction coaches. Like, Rose, what have you not done?
It's really nice to hear you say that. You know what it's like when you see all the things you haven't done. Yeah. You don't see the things you have done. Well, that's one.
For sure.
It's so impressive because I asked you for a bio and you sent me the link. And we'll share that in the show notes. You sent me the link for your website. And I just did it because I know you. So I wouldn't be about Rose. I wouldn't necessarily go rooting around there. I was like, bloody hell, you've done loads, girl. That's amazing. So yeah, welcome. It's just lovely to have you on. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really good to be here.
So first of all, I suppose the listeners might want to know, how do I know you and where did I meet you? And Julia as well. You've heard me mention Rose before, and I've done some lovely work with Rose. I met Rose in my first year of sobriety when I met another friend, actually, who was going to your yoga, your recovery yoga, your discovery yoga on Hope Street, which I think is just such, you know, so symbolic. And at the time I had a day off when the children were little, and I used to do a course in the Tate as one of my artist dates as part of the Artist Way. And I met a girl, and it was the first time I ever actually discussed being sober because it was so new to me. Somebody had invited us to a party for Halloween. And I said to her, the girl, I said, I don't drink, so I don't know whether. And she went, no, nor do I. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, wow. And she said, oh, well, you probably enjoy Rose's yoga. And I went to your yoga. And I was also at that time, as Julia was, listening to Holly Whitaker and Laura McCown and their podcast called The Home Podcast. Mm-hmm. So I was in that real kind of totally absorbing myself in sobriety stage and learning as much as I could learn about, you know, everything about my new life, but also feeling a bit lonely and dislocated because so many people in my social circles were obviously drinking. And I used to listen a lot to Holly talk about friendship and the people that, and Laura, the friends they had made, they became friends through sobriety, just as you and I did, Julia. Mine was amazing. And I was like, where are these people? And I found them in your yoga studio upstairs on Hope Street. And also, just as another addition there, I remember Holly Whitaker talking a lot about Kundalini yoga and just how amazing it was as part of her journey. And in her toolkit. And I think you don't just do exclusively Kundalini, Rose, do you? But I remember when I went to that first class, just thinking, this is new. This is a different type of yoga. I love what you're doing here.
Very different.
And I just came out feeling completely energized, and I found it transformational.
Just to jump in there as well, like just like Liz, I was very immersed in the Home Podcast and loved Holly's work and Laura's, but loved what Holly said about how much yoga had been part of her recovery journey. And I already practiced yoga. I'd been going to an Ashtanga class for a long time, on and off, like since my 20s, and I was 40 when I stopped drinking. And what got me back into yoga in early sobriety was actually taking my little one, who was a baby at the time, my youngest daughter, to a baby yoga class. And then from that, got really back into yoga myself as part of my sober journey. And because of what everything that Holly Whitaker was saying about Kundalini yoga on her podcast, I specifically went out and found a Kundalini yoga teacher, Daria, in Manchester, who, and I'll link her her page as well, because her classes are wonderful and she does online stuff as well. And yeah, so Kundalini yoga has been kind of part of my sober journey as well, and yoga more broadly.
I just think, so just to kind of give us context, how did you get to that place, Rose, where I met you on that random, it was probably a November, probably very early sobriety anyway, when I met you that morning in Hope Street?
Well, I guess picking up on two themes, so yoga and sobriety. So I was heavily in addiction in my teens, 20s, and into my 30s. And my dad practiced yoga when I was a kid. So it was familiar to me. And I'd gone to classes in my 20s, but I'd gone to Iyengar, which is very precise and specific and all about the alignment. And that just isn't me at all. So I'd find myself feeling kind of restless and I'd very much get into that right, wrong thinking, like, am I getting it right? And so I didn't find it that relaxing or energizing. I found it hard work, both mentally and physically. But I still had this sense that there was something to it. And it wasn't until I was employed to do a job in Trinidad in the Caribbean. And it was a community. I used to do community video projects, which were about bringing different communities together where there was discord, and having them, first of all, communicate through video, making their own videos about their experiences and sharing them.
Amazing.
And then
it's amazing
to make a video together. And the local facilitator that I was working with, so there was me and her, she was a Kundalini yoga teacher. And so she said, come to my class. And I went along, and actually by that point I was already doing daily yoga. I'd found a teacher I really loved. It was more hatha based. I was already doing daily yoga. So when I did Kundalini, my mind was kind of saying, this is very I'm not sure this is safe, all of that kind of, you know, assessing, judging, analyzing. And what would my teacher say? You know, I'm sure she wouldn't agree with this. So I had all of that going on. But there was something about it that I couldn't turn away from. It began to work so deeply. In an internal state, I had a really tangible sense of aliveness and energy, and being able to experience how energy moves and where it's blocked. And I just found it. I mean, also sort of altered states, which clearly I had a desire for. So I kept going with the Kundalini, and I knew something had to stop in terms of drink and drugs.
You were still using at that stage.
I was. So that was at sort of 2003, 2004. And I came into recovery in 2008. And I feel like Kundalini yoga was the thing that made it so uncomfortable to still be using. And that's gave me an alternative. Allowed me to see, okay, I want to be on my mat, and I can't get on my mat this morning because I can't get out of bed. So I started to commit to something as well. I was going to say as deeply in a different way, but deeply in the way that I had been committed to my drinking and drugging. Once that became apparent, the things that were uncomfortable became more and more and more uncomfortable, and
of course,
you know, brought me to my knees until I just thought, I need help, I can't do this. And for me, that meant going into 12-step recovery because I didn't know anything else.
Yeah.
And the reason I was in Liverpool was because Rob, my partner, and myself, once I was in recovery, so it was I came in 2008, that was 2011.
Yeah.
We did a 3-month hike together through the north
into
Scotland, across Scotland, and it was completely life-changing. It was incredible.
Wow.
And we knew we wanted to live in the north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what we did. So that's what brought me to Liverpool. And then very unexpectedly, just as we landed in Liverpool, I had a diagnosis of thyroid cancer.
Bloody hell.
It was terrifying and, you know, alarming. It was 6 weeks before we were getting married.
Oh, my God.
But it was also completely transformative. It was it taught me so much. I just made a commitment. I'm going to come out of this healthier than I've ever been. And so through that, I trained as an integrative health coach. I trained as a yoga teacher, which I'd always longed to do, but kind of never really given myself permission to do. I was well educated and I should be using my brain and not doing something alternative. But yeah, and that's how I came to be teaching that class that you walked into that day.
I love it. You know, when you talk about the cancer, were you actually dealing with that and studying at the same time? Was that going on?
I was, yeah, but that was really helpful.
Yeah.
Because I needed to feel some sense of autonomy and like I was doing something for myself, because the whole medical process, I was so powerless. And obviously I was powerless in terms of I don't know what's going to happen here, but I can do everything in my power to give myself the best chance of getting through. And I'm not saying I've got the answer,
I've
got the answer. I'm just incredibly lucky, and I really recognize that.
It sounds like it was helpful at the time to do what was in your sphere of influence to be able to, you say, to take the power that you did have and use that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I needed to feel like I was doing something. Yeah.
Bloody. Wow. And so everything is okay now, moving, fast forwarding to 2020.
Yeah, amazingly. Yeah. So you get a horrible 7-year kind of period where you have to keep having checks.
Yeah.
That was a while ago now that I came through that.
What an inspiration. That is absolutely, and that has actually been your life path since, hasn't it? The skills that you've acquired on this journey. What I love about, your skills is that you share them so readily. And you know, Rose, it's amazing because the gifts that you give to us, I give to other people too. So I remember being at going to Nod first. So Julia, kind of a couple of months into the yoga, Rose was running a retreat in Wales in this gorgeous place near the sea in a convent. Isn't it a convent? It's run by nuns.
It is. Yeah, it's run by nuns.
Oh, it's such a peaceful. This property, it's just this beautiful old house, and they feed us, didn't they? They gave us 3 meals, and we did yoga with Rose every day. And I was training for marathons and things at the time, so I'd go out for a little run in the morning. There was a labyrinth there. Do you remember? There was a labyrinth. We did labyrinth walks. But on that retreat, what I loved especially, that changed my life, because after that, and I said this to you before, Rose, it gave me the courage and the self-belief to actually draw a line in the sand with the relationship that wasn't working, you know. And we were doing something where you gave me the metaphor of just, you know, because when we want to make these swinging changes in our lives, it's like all or nothing. It's binaries of, you know, we're either in the relationship or out of the relationship. And I was in that real painful cognitive dissonance, I suppose, wanting to change, knowing I had to change, but not having a clue how I was going to do it. And your metaphor, you mightn't even remember it, Rose, was of the river and just very gently changing course, just very slightly. And that river will end up in a completely different place after years, you know, if you just make that one time. Do you remember it, Rose? You might not.
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And I think for me, I've used that with clients. I've used that with groups when I've been doing resilience training.
I'm going to use that with clients. I love that.
It's beautiful because I can actually see a visual of a river when I think about it. And I do, when we go dipping and when we dip in rivers or in lakes, I do think about it. It does come to my mind because I think, you know, we don't need to make, and this is what I say with habit change, and I know that you're an expert in that area as well, Rose, and you are as well, obviously, Julia. We don't need to make the big, this is it, it's all or nothing. We're making a huge change now. I'm going to get rid of all of this and change my life completely. Just one tiny little thing has such a huge compound effect on your life 5 years down the line. I'm in a completely different place now, Rose, where I was at that time. But geographically, I'm pretty much in the same place because, you know, you might know that we live next door to each other, myself and my ex, and it's a very unusual situation, a bit unorthodox. Mm. And as the kids get older, they're a bit like, what the hell? But So for now, it works.
Yeah,
that's great.
But emotionally and but my life is completely different, you know?
Yeah.
So that was then. Mm. So, yeah.
What I love about that metaphor as well is that it really illustrates how you don't have to control every step of the process, because I don't know if Liz explained, Rose, but I'm a psychotherapist and counsellor, and so I work one-to-one with clients. And what I often see with my clients is that feeling of I can't make changes because it's just too exhausting and it's too much and it's too big. And that feeling of you can just make a small change and your life will start to flow in this different direction, and you don't have to control and micromanage every step of the process. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be overwhelming. I love that because that's so true, isn't it, in the way that life
goes. It is
goes.
So true. And I love the fact that, you know, if we think of water, it's so, I mean, it can be very rough and turbulent, but it's so soft and fluid, and you think of the strength of it. You know, water can wear down stone,
metal,
and but it's like the breath. You know, think of the softness of the breath.
Mm.
It's so, it's not that drive. It's not that forceful kind of action that I always used to feel was required. You know, like, gotta drive this into existence. So I've gotta force myself to do this or force the change. It's just that sense of, okay, just softly, just relax into it.
Yeah. Well, we talk about being in flow, don't we, in all sorts of contexts, in creativity, in yoga, and then we talk about that feeling of being in the flow of life.
And I also use the metaphor of being on a boat with morning pages, and I've mentioned this before. But again, there's that the water is part of that that metaphor, where the morning pages are they're like your boat. So you're just on that boat through life, going along on the river, and sometimes it's going to be choppy, and sometimes it's going to be stormy. But the pages are there, the boat is there. Mm. You come to the page, and I think it's just that daily practice, and it's the same with yoga, isn't it, Rose? You know, it's an anchor; it just keeps you in a solid place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the daily aspect, I mean, I need it daily for sure.
Yeah,
it regulates my emotions, clarifies my mind. You know, has me come in touch with my body and actually what's going on for me. And I've spent so many years avoiding the internal and just focusing on the external, thinking unconsciously, the solution's out here, the solution's out here, you know, make me feel better. And that's one of the remarkable things I think about recovery is beginning to inhabit that inner reality and move beyond the intense discomfort of who I am, and starting to find coherence and a sense of wholeness and flow, and actually experiencing states of expansion and peace that are remarkable, you know, that really do have me in a state of wonder, and it's, you know, not needing to be high or off my face to feel a sense of freedom or relief. It's a very different quality. And I kind of think of recovery as that journey from the external to the internal. And
For sure. I really agree. And one of the things that was transformational for me about yoga as a recovery tool was that discovery that what I'd been looking for outside of myself had kind of been there all along, but I just needed to get quiet enough to be able to hear it or to tune in to it.
Yeah.
That kind of sense of peace and wholeness. It was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Silence did not exist in my life previously. No. Unless I was past that.
Me neither.
Yes. Yes. It's that what they say, it's that it's in the Bible, isn't it? There's that still quiet voice inside you.
Yeah.
We don't hear it. That's why the morning pages
are intuition.
Yeah.
I could not trust my intuition.
No. So we didn't know, but we didn't have the skills available to us to even access it. Because I think we're all of a similar vintage. You know, Julie is a bit younger, I think, than us, but the same
not culture. Not much, though.
We've had the same cultural kind of upbringing, haven't we, as kind of feminists and girls and rebels and pissheads. And this is what we did. So from a very early age, now I understand what the teenage brain is. Now I've got a little bit of understanding of the neuroscience of where they are at their developmental stages. I'm like, Jesus, at the age of 14 and 15, getting up to the nonsense we were getting up to.
Shouldn't have wondered, we didn't have a clue who we were.
Yeah, by the time we were in our 30s.
Yeah.
You know, you're left there having to adult and not having a baldy how to go about it.
Yeah.
Using substances to that don't help to try and navigate these situations. And again, from the external, and it's kind of going back on what we were talking about in the last podcast, Julia, when we were talking about extroversion and introversion, wasn't it?
Mm.
It's like, you know, we were very much living an extroverted life then and not even aware of the introverted, you know, the power of introversion.
Yeah, the inner world. Because for me, I think the inner world was so uncomfortable. I had a very negative view of myself, and one of the things that when you were talking about Kundalini yoga that was a game changer for me with Kundalini was how much it taught me about being able to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because a lot of the kriyas and a lot of the things that you do in Kundalini yoga are very kind of, they're like repetitive movements, and you might have your arms like up in like you can't, obviously on the podcast you can't see this, but in like a cactus shape either side of your body for a long time, and it starts to really hurt, and your brain's telling you, but it's not actually hurting really, it's just that feeling of discomfort, and your brain's telling you, I can't do it, but you do it, and you keep doing it, and you're chanting the mantra, and it's amazing how much that practice taught me about how to be uncomfortable, which has then been beneficial for all sorts of other things. It got me through a half marathon. It's helped my other yoga practice. I do Bikram yoga as well, so that again is obviously very uncomfortable, and just life in general. That ability, because that's what I couldn't do before. I couldn't be uncomfortable, so I would reach for a drink. I would reach for whatever.
Yeah,
another person, food, etc. And I'm getting much better now.
So
I
remember hearing about Kundalini yoga, because we were talking about Kundalini yoga, and I had been going to yoga in the past, and I, like you, Rose, I had turned up in my drinking days. You know, there were times when I'd go to an early yoga session when I lived in Abu Dhabi, and I'd go to an early yoga session and feel amazing and so virtuous, and then go on the piss, you know, because it was like, whoa, look at me, I'm amazing. Look at my new early morning regime. But what Kundalini yoga, it didn't really come into my sphere of knowledge until, as I mentioned, Holly Whitaker. How would you define it compared to the yoga where you go to, the yoga that we tend to go to in the gym, or your traditional type of yoga? What's the difference in Kundalini?
It's called the yoga of awareness.
Right.
I think you could define it by as many people as there are teaching it, and that everybody will have their own expression as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my experience of it is it's really helped me to understand how the body and mind work together, how to regulate my nervous system, how to balance my hormones, and how to work with the breath to find clarity, so that when I am activated and I'm feeling overwhelmed or angry or any of those places I can go to, or I'm deep in shame or, you know, whatever uncomfortable parts of me come up, I have a direct knowledge of how to move through that state. And I trust it because I've done it before and I know it's possible. And so for me, if I'm just dealing with my emotions and my thoughts through talking, thinking, expressing, I can get very lost in that process. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my mind, from the years of kind of covering up what's really going on and what I'm really thinking, and is very sophisticated. You know, it can fool me really easily into telling me, you know, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And with the body, I find it a very direct, with the body and the breath, I find it a very direct route to saying, okay, this isn't working, I need to shift. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't found that with other yoga. I'm not saying that it's not available. I'm sure it is. And I feel that different people get attracted to the yoga that works for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, ultimately yoga means union. And my experience is the union that I felt through Kundalini yoga in the different parts of myself, you know, in addiction being that kind of shattered self, it allowed me to start feeling those parts come together and work together. And there was a lot of emphasis on the energy channels up the spine, the chakras. And I love that. You know, I love working with the different aspects of our finite selves, so the physical and our infinite selves.
Yeah. Wow.
Because we are both. And I think living those two aspects of being human can be really challenging and complicated. And the heart is the bridge. The heart is the place where we can find balance between the two and allow the two to work together. And I'm so aware of how much I don't know with yoga, you know, that it's one of those areas once you start learning, you just realize I could spend lifetimes still there'd be so much I didn't know.
But I think you've got to remember, and like we said at the start of the podcast, just how much you actually do know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you bring so much, such a wealth of knowledge to your lessons, to your sessions, to any interaction, that I think you sometimes might do yourself a disservice by not, you know, you are an expert in your field. And you, whatever it is, you have a certain alchemy, Rose, that is an absolute God-given gift. Because
It's got nothing to do with me.
God knows where it came from. But anyway, but it's amazing. Because without fail, when I do work with you, it does have an impact that ripples in my life from ages after. Ages and ages after. So I'll give you an example. The most recent time we came together was a couple of weeks ago when you were back up in Liverpool. And that's the first time we've been together in years because you've moved away. And you held a little session and a few of your regulars from that discovery yoga time came. And we did some heart-based yoga, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the work. And that was beautiful. And I said it to you afterwards, when I arrived, the bells were ringing because it's just between, it's a Hope Street. So Julia, you might not know Hope Street in Liverpool, but Hope Street is the street, the main artery between the two cathedrals, the Catholic Cathedral and the Anglican Cathedral. It's a really beautiful street. I love that street. And it was only that day that I realized, oh my goodness, that I've been coming to this yoga here on Hope Street when I was in a place of real despair, and it gave me so much hope.
And it gave you hope.
It was like full circle, because when I arrived, the bells were ringing when Rose was, just by chance, weren't they, Rose? Just happened at the same time.
Just those saying, tune into the silence.
Just as we were getting settled, ding dong, boom. And then at the very end, it was like they were ringing out in joy. And you couldn't have timed it better, Rose. If you did, you basically,
well, thanks. I
you
did, must have I had did, that. I did have with... a little word. I did have a little word. Sorted it all.
This is a very important session we have going on here, Catholic Cathedral. Sort this out, bell ringers. But it was just so special. And after that, my word of the year, because myself and Julia, we talk about this instead of doing New Year resolutions, we choose the word of the year. My word of the year is growth. And since your class and since that time, that precious pause that you gave me in that time and the focus on heart and giving and sharing, my business, I've had more interest. So after that session with you, Rose, I just feel, because at that time we were just coming out of winter and I was feeling a bit like, oh, stuck. And things were a bit slow with the business. I was a little bit panicky. And it just, I mean, obviously it could be coincidence, but I don't believe it is. I believe it's something far greater than that.
It's interesting you say that. I really believe in working with the body to remove blocks. You know, blocks can start, can't they, as emotion or a thought, or can just be habitual.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a deep belief that I'm not good enough or whatever it is, then that is going to permeate and influence what happens in my life. At least that's how I see it. And yeah, I at the moment I'm doing a spring cleanse. I always do a spring cleanse around this time in the equinox, and it's interesting to do it. And I work with the liver for myself, really focused on that organ. And invariably, because you're essentially clearing out the shit that you no longer need,
put
it bluntly, to create space for the new. What happens is invariably after the cleanse, new things just start arriving.
Amazing.
Out of the blue.
Love it. Because this is what's happened to me.
Could you make space? Yeah, you make space for them.
I honestly, this is what has happened to me. Things have come onto my lap literally since that session with you. So the session with you was a couple of weeks ago, and I was getting to a stage when you say about imposter syndrome, it wasn't so much imposter syndrome with me at that stage, but it was just this, you know, the kids are at the age now where they do need things like food and shelter and other things. and I was like, Jesus, you know, as a single mom, I know that their dad is supportive and we co-parent well together. But equally, I was thinking, you know, you're 53 years of age, and are you really this skint? Is it really going to be this hard? And you know, and the car broke down, and I have no wheels, and a lot of things were just blocking me. And I was thinking, this is hard. I feel like I'm hustling, and I'm not getting anywhere. Mm. And then when I went to your class, I just kind of took a step back, and I just thought, because at that time I was thinking, Am I actually going to have to go back into the classroom and teach again and just get a job, and just forget this pipe dream? And I was feeling really sad about it.
Yeah, and it sounds like there was like quite a bit of fear coming up for you there as well, that it was quite kind of fear-based maybe. Yeah,
very much. Yeah, very much. Because I was thinking, I'm skinned. This is hard. Mm. And I kept trying to say, believe, because it was the self-belief, the blind self-belief that literally got me into this situation that made me jump, that made me go for it. And so far it was paying off, but there was that lull, that winter lull, where I was beginning to really fear. You're right there, Julia. I was feeling fearful, thinking of the future. There's our future thinking and anxiety. I could feel it. I was waking up, Rose, with a bit of a knot in my stomach. And I was thinking, Jesus, this isn't why I've gone freelance. This is not why I'm aligned with my purpose when I'm delivering and when I'm writing and when I'm creating courses and when we're podcasting and doing things like this. But why am I feeling like this? And it was very much, you know, my limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think going to the class, just seeing you, it's almost like it put me back. It just recalibrated. Oh. You know what I mean?
Oh.
It was the connection. And the breathing and the chanting and the movement, all of it together with that being in that space, being 6 years sober at the time as well. It was around the time of my soberversary. All of that together, and also seeing Hannah and other friends, it just put me back on track. And then suddenly, just out of the blue, various things have opened up for me.
It's like it opened up the flow again. Do you know what that reminds me of? This is a bit off-piste and a bit random, but But it really, it feels like a similar thing in a way. When I was trying to get pregnant with my eldest, I had a couple of miscarriages and I had a bit of a kind of a rocky road to pregnancy. I was drinking quite heavily at the time in terms of kind of binge drinking, which clearly was not going to be helping with that whole process. And as part of my kind of attempt to get to grips with the problem, I went to see a herbalist who was amazing. And she was also like a really, like it was like herbalist slash therapist, really. My sessions with her were so beneficial. And she was a nutritionist as well. And at the time, I was keeping this kind of obsessive list on my phone of all the things, like of when we tried to get pregnant and when I'd got my period and what I'd been eating and what, and just everything. And just this kind of, and it was this huge, great long note on my phone. And then something happened and I lost it and I deleted it. And I went to my session with Rasheem, my herbalist, and was nearly in tears about it. I was like, but that was all my information and I needed that. How am I going to get pregnant now? And really panicking. And she said, no, you needed to do that. That needed to go. And at the time I was kind of thinking, yeah, right. But actually, having kind of shed that, all that kind of that litany of everything that had gone wrong and all the negatives, it was like something had kind of shifted, and it may be coincidence, it may not, but like literally the next month I got pregnant with my eldest, and it was like I'd made space for her.
I love that story. It reminds me, one of my teachers talks about how we're in the flow of life and we'll hold on to something. It's like we're falling, right? Or you might think we're flowing down a river. We hold on to something to try and give us a sense of security and safety. And then we realize that that's moving too. We have to let go of it and continue the flow of life. But it's that I really know that for myself, how when I'm overwhelmed, I can want to control something. I can want to hold on to something, no matter how uncomfortable it is. Just try and get a sense of safety or security.
And it often is that fear base, isn't it? That fear of the future and fear that the future is never going to work out the way you want it to. And it does cause that holding on. And it also makes me think of how I used to hold on to alcohol and how I clung on to my drinking because I was so scared of what the alternative looked like. But sobriety, as we often talk about on here, has been just the best thing I ever did, literally. That and parenthood. But it's been so transformational in such a positive way in every aspect of my life.
Well, this is it. If we weren't sober, we wouldn't be here right now having this conversation. We wouldn't have met each other. Any of the three of us wouldn't be here. Isn't that great?
Or if we had, we might not remember.
It definitely wouldn't have been meaningful, but it might have been meaningful at the time. Fleetingly meaningful. You'd have been my best friend.
It would be dangerous. I always think that when I meet other sober people, I just think, God, it's such a good job we didn't meet when we were drinking, because it would have been absolute carnage.
Yeah,
that was me when I was that first soberista meeting, Julia. And I say this all the time, but looking around at everybody thinking, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know.
Be mad. But I think that's why we have that instant get on factor as well, though. I think there's that shared story, you know, the shared history and being able to be honest. I think with me, sobriety gave me a little bit more, well, definitely it gave me authenticity, because you know, you've got to own the crap that's gone on with it as well.
Also, like, I always find as well, there's like a shared outlook on life that's like an enthusiasm for life that I just love so much in people. And because, you know, we went at drinking and drugs and all of that full throttle and with enthusiasm, I certainly did. But now we've gone at sobriety and recovery in the same way. And I just love that.
It's funny. I was watching, I don't know if you've seen on ITV, there is The Dry. Have you ever heard of The Dry? It's a comedy drama series. And I think they're promoting it again now because Poor Things won so many Oscars, because it's from the producers of Poor Things, but it's okay. Irish, based in Dublin, and it's about this girl.
Oh, I did see the first series.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
There's some absolute corkers in there, but she goes home and she's got the enthusiasm of sobriety, and I think I'm completely over-identifying all over the shop.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch
that. I was watching her. She comes home and she decides she wants to have a family meeting. she texts on the family group chat. It's like, family, it's time to be honest. I'm calling a family meeting. And I think when we're in the sphere of sobriety, we talk about authenticity and being open, but we forget that the rest of the world isn't on the same page sometimes. Yes. And the reaction of the parents and the family was hilarious, because the mother went, Jesus Christ, she wants a family meeting. Who does she think we are? Americans. And I just thought, oh my God, that's so true. Because it's like, I'm sober, I'm evangelical. Everyone
I know, I know.
It's our authenticity piece. But yeah.
Yeah.
But I think so Rose, what have you got planned coming up in the near future? Are you holding workshops? Can we reach you? Are you doing things online?
Yeah, this month I'm just finishing the cleanse with a group. And then I'm always teaching, so I'm teaching online and in person next month in London. And then in May, I'm doing a retreat in Yorkshire, in a beautiful place in the North Yorkshire Dales. And I'm also opening up. I mean, there's always new things coming, and currently I'm kind of hesitating because I've been sitting with this for a couple of years, and I feel quite daunted by it, but it keeps coming and I know that I'm drawn to work with it. It's working with women who don't have children, who are sort of perimenopause, menopause, and it's called My Heart Is for the Whole.
Beautiful.
Working with other women, with myself and other women, to tune into where our hearts are called to offer healing and love.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of the incredible capacity women have to love, and as mothers, you know, mothers, women pour love into their children in the most, you know, I've seen it in my friends, just the most selfless, abundant way. And as women without children, sometimes I think we can feel an absence in that, although we have that flow of love, we don't necessarily consciously know how to direct it for the whole.
Wow.
I think there's something about not having the responsibility of children or grandchildren that offers space for that. And clearly the world is so in need of love and healing at the moment. So that's just starting at the moment.
That sounds amazing.
It does.
Yeah. That's something that's never even occurred to me, you know, now that you mention it. Has it to you, Julia?
I think because I was later on in life when I started trying to get pregnant, I kind of went through that period of wrestling with the possibility that it might never happen for me and what that would look and feel like in quite a kind of a way that felt real to me and relevant to my life, if that makes sense. So all I can say is what a gift to those women that will benefit from that so much.
I think if that's your what's calling you, it's calling you for a reason. You know that, Rose.
Yeah.
And you've got so much to give, so much to give. And I know so many people who would benefit from it and would avail of it, you know. So I think that's a lovely, a real gift. Yeah. So will you create a course, or will you try and do something online?
Initially, I'm going to gather stories so I can have more understanding of what women are bringing. But while I'm doing that, we're going to meet online, probably start once a month, because I'd really like to work with the heart, brain, coherence, movement and breath so that we can, each of us can have a tangible sense of dropping into that space. Because when there's heart, brain, coherence, we know now what the ancients must have known. the electromagnetic field of the heart is 7,000 times greater than the electromagnetic field of the brain.
Wow.
But it has to be activated, because we put so much attention on the mind and have energy up here.
Yeah.
And there's more messages being sent from the heart to the brain and the brain to the heart. And when we're in that state where the electromagnetic field of the heart is strong, the brain entrains with the heart, and that affects all of the systems of the body, and we're essentially at our optimum. But it shifts the way that the mind works. So the neural pathways are different when you're centered in your heart. Mm-hmm. And there's an intuition and a knowing. So they've done these extraordinary research projects, yeah, where they've shown people completely random pictures. Nobody, mm-hmm, even the people setting up the experiments, research, know what order or what's in there. They're completely random, but they give you different emotional responses, and the brain starts to predict what's going to come.
No.
To prepare for what you're about to see. It's just extraordinary.
Oh my god.
So I think it's as little as I know about quantum field. My husband is a scientist, and we have kind of conversations where I'm coming from the place I'm coming from, and he's coming from physics and science.
Amazing.
And there's definitely this place where those merge. And I just wonder if the heart is the quantum organ.
Wow.
That actually allows us to know because it's the organ of connection, isn't it? It's the only organ. We have the horizontal axis as well as the vertical axis. And
I love it when the scientific meets the mystical.
I love it.
You know, the idea of being heart-led, it's not just an idea, is it? It's not just a way of being. It is an actual scientific thing.
It's a state of being. Yeah. It is a state of being which affects body, mind.
Do you know any books that you could recommend? I'm putting you on the spot here. Or research
Heart
we could dig
Math
into.
Institute. Heart Math Institute.
Yes.
Is a good place to start. So they've got a website. They've actually got a free book you can download.
I love the sound of this. I know that this was rolled out in schools for a while, you know.
I think it still is.
It's hit and miss, though, the way that it's delivered. Like anything, when it comes to a kind of positive psychology type intervention, it's very much left to the people who end up delivering it and the passion of the people who invest in it.
Yeah, and especially with kids, you've got to get them engaged, haven't you? I mean, you have with anyone, but with kids particularly, otherwise they'll just be like, because I know that like at my school, that at my kids' school, they do My Happy Minds, which from what I've heard about it is, and again, an amazing
thing. That is good,
I think the way that it's delivered at my kids' school, that they're just a bit like, that thing where they talked to us about the brain, it's a bit
and we have to fill in a book. But with the heart math, they were doing it with teachers as well, Julia. That was the thing that kind of interested me, but I didn't actually, do you know what, I heard them talking about it, but they were doing it for new members of staff who had just joined. So I never got involved because I just thought, I saw the word math. I'll be honest with you. I saw the word math and I went, that's shite. It's not for me.
Yeah, that's not for me.
There's my limiting belief. It's like, I don't do math.
Some of the information, I mean, you probably get into it, Liz. Some of the information, it doesn't speak to the way my mind, or it isn't presented in the way that my mind easily digests. But it definitely is a good place to start. I mean, good old Google guru as well. There's some good, if you Google heart brain coherence, there's some good articles online as well. I think Psychology Today has got a couple.
I love the sound of it, because I love anything that's to do with the brain as well, you know. And if your neural pathways are changing, as we know, I mean, the reason why both myself, I think I speak for you as well, Julie, in this, why we love all that side of it is because of this Naked Mind by Annie Grace.
Yeah.
And that's changed my whole,
I haven't read it.
You know, it's so good, because we learned about basically the neuroscience of addiction or of habit change. And it just, it clarified so many things for us. And it was the first time I started to really grapple with the concept of cognitive dissonance, which is, you know, waking up going, I'm never going to drink again. And then finding yourself with the wine open again by dinner time, thinking, what the hell? I've let myself down again and again and again. And that was the first place where I discovered it wasn't necessarily my fault when I started to look at how the brain was working. So for me, I think I'd love that. What about you, Julia?
Definitely. And I'm just thinking about again with client work. I just love the fact that I'm able to talk to my clients about how by changing how they talk to themselves and by changing what they do, they can literally change how their brains are structured. They can change the physical structure of their brains in terms of how the neurons talk to each other. And it just, it's so empowering. It gives us all so much more. And it's balancing that with, as we said about, you know, we don't want to try and control everything, but when people are feeling so lost and so despairing and so at such a low ebb, to be able to sit with someone and kind of work with them about how they can start to move away from that. It's just that by using that kind of, you know, by using their own brains and bodies is just amazing. And just going back to what you were saying about that kind of embodiment of I have definitely found all yoga, but particularly Kundalini yoga, just to bring it kind of full circle back to yoga, such an embodying practice. It's really, really, really helped me as part of my sober journey to get me back into my body through yoga.
Me too. And I think there's something as women, because traditionally the infinite energy centers are the masculine Shiva and the finite energy centers, so earth, water, fire, are the female, divine female entity, Shakti. And that those two aspects of male and female exist within all of us and meet at the heart. And I think we've been in a time where the, certainly in the Christian tradition or culture that I've grown up in, where we've kind of elevated the status of the infinite and degraded the earth, the body. You know, that's the body is something to be ashamed of. You think about Adam and Eve. You know, Victorian values and all that kind of thing.
Catholic
and
Ireland.
That sense of actually coming back to the earth, coming back to the body. I think it's for the healing, not just of us individually, but also for the earth. You know.
Yeah, I was just thinking how much that fits with the cultural shift we're living through at the moment. That we have glorified the infinite. We've been pulling fossil fuels out the ground, and this is we can do this forever. This is going to carry on forever, and you know, capitalism's just been kind of increasing across the globe, and it's been consume,
and it's consuming itself. Yeah,
things are never going to run out, and now we've reached this point of our evolution as a species where it's like, oh, actually things might run out. Things will run out.
Yeah, we need balance.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. It's so fascinating. And I think just moving forward, because what we do in the podcast is we have a rise and shine at the end. And I'd love just a tip, something that I could do every day that would connect me maybe heart brain coherence wise or could you recommend something that
is it something you want to be able to do anywhere or something you want to do as a dedicated practice so you sort of say okay this is my 5 minutes
Do you have a suggestion for both? I think for me, I do like to have dedicated practice. So it would be something that I would use to habit stack. If I refer to, atomic habits and James Clear's work, I'll do like my morning pages. I do my meditation, my morning pages, my gratitudes, and my law of attraction planner every single day with my coffee. That's my thing. And exercise somewhere along the line. And it's no longer, I'm not slavish to it. It's just who I am now. So something that I might be able to shoehorn in there, not for the sake of doing just, and I say this and it's like, oh, there's a litany of things that she does every morning. But that's to me, that's scaffolds my mental health and my well-being. to be able to show up every day and do that? So would there be something off the top of your head?
Both of the ones that I'd suggest are breath related.
Love it.
I find breath the most powerful and transformative tool that we have, and it's right under our noses.
Yeah.
Nasal breathing, if you breathe through the mouth, starting to breathe through the nose. If you already breathe through the nose during the day when you think, you sort of remember, extend the exhale, just slow down and extend the exhale.
Through the nose?
Breathing through the nose and extending the exhale will repattern your nervous system. That's going to change hormones that are being released into your body. It's going to change the way you feel in yourself, and that's going to change the kinds of thoughts that you're having.
Can we try it now? I know this isn't great listening, but listeners might be able to join us. If you explain what to do, Rose, and we do it.
Well, think you could be sat on a bus, you could be sat in traffic, you could be stood in the supermarket queue. So just, you can even have your eyes open and just come into your body. So just sense your physical form.
Right.
And feel how the flow of the breath has the body move. And feel that dance between the physical flow and the flow of the breath. And you may experience how the inhale is expansive, spacious, uplifting. And wherever you need space, expansion, uplifting in yourself or your life, just breathe that inhale into those areas. And then begin to notice the quality of the exhale. It's a softening, it's a surrender, it's a release. And begin to slow down the exhale. And see if you can really empty yourself with the breath at the end of each exhale. So that means drawing the navel in. You might find a slight lift in the pelvic floor. Notice how much more expansive you can be, receiving the life of the inhale, when you really surrender and let go. Tempted to just keep you there because you both look so peaceful.
We're on a podcast.
Oh, Rose, I love that so much.
Gorgeous.
So what I'd like you to do, Rose, is could you just leave me a voice note every morning about 6:30? If it's not too much to ask, is that all right? Great, lovely, thank you. No, that is just
You can do anywhere, you know, just coming into the body, thinking about the quality of the inhale, opening, and then slowing down the exhale, really releasing with the exhale, and seeing how the release allows you to open more fully.
Mm-hmm.
And then one for your morning practice, if you wanted to cultivate the heart brain coherence. Yes. So it's bringing the hands into Gyan Mudra, which is forefinger and thumb touching, mm-hmm. and the other fingers pointing straight up. And you're crisscrossing the hands in front of the face, if that works for you. If it's a bit tight in the shoulders, you could bring it a bit further down to the throat or in front of the heart. And if you're not practiced in Kundalini yoga, then long, deep breathing. If you are practiced in Kundalini yoga, then you'd use a breath of fire, which is the active navel on the exhale. So That's a breath that you build up over time. So if you're new to it, be really gentle. If you're trying that breath of fire, be really gentle. You might want to do a few seconds of breath of fire, then come to long deep breathing, come back to the breath of fire. Yeah,
I love that. What does that do? Another
really powerful SOPA tool as well. Holly used to talk about that quite a bit. Mm. It's a good one for kind of managing stress, and I use it quite a lot actually.
It's great.
With the same hand movements as well. Do you do that as well?
No, it doesn't always have those hand movements, but no, the breath of fire is it's a very energizing breathing practice.
Very detoxifying, yeah, cleanses the blood.
It's great for what I kind of find it really helpful for is like shifting in energy state. If I'm feeling quite stuck energetically, it's great for kind of shifting out into a different space. Definitely. So it's short, sharp exhales through, like in Kundalini, it's in through the nose, out through the nose. And in Bikram, it's out through the mouth. So either can.
Yeah.
You're basically you're snapping your navel in and exhaling at the same time. And you just let the inhales take care of themselves. So you just focus your attention on the exhale.
Love it. I do love that one. And that's one that was really powerful in your class recently, Rose, and especially with the arm movement, crisscrossing. So would you say do this for like a minute or something? Could I say, Alexa, time a minute, and then just...
I'd start where you're comfortable. So if a minute feels manageable, start with a minute. My guess is once you've done a minute, you might feel like going for two. But it will change day to day. I'd say the most important thing is not to force or strain. And, you know, 3 minutes would be a great commitment, doing that 3 minutes.
Wow. Brilliant.
The three-minute time frame actually starts to really affect the purity of the blood.
Mm. So what are the benefits of that practice you were saying about affecting the purity
that builds the electromagnetic field of the heart.
I love it. Oh my God. That's amazing. Mm. I'm all over that. That's it.
Plenty of other things that it does in terms of the breath of fire, but that's the.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining us. It's been so
wonderful. Thank you so much for asking me. It's such a pleasure.
We're so happy to have you here. Honestly, I could
stay on all morning.
Oh, will you come back again? So nice. Will you come back again? Because I'd love. It'd be great if you could come back on when things get established with this, you know, the group that you're going to set up and the work that you're going to do moving forward.
Yeah.
I think it'd be lovely to revisit and see where you are and check in with us.
Absolutely, because we've not talked a lot about that sort of perimenopausal time of life. Yeah. And given that we are very much in it, it'd be a brilliant one to talk about. Yeah, and a lot of our listeners it'll resonate with as well.
Really benefit from it. Yeah. It'd be lovely. But Rose, Julia, that's going to be my rise and shine. Mm-hmm. My rise and shine is going to be, what do you call that? Breath, is it like just breath of fire, or do you have a name
breath
for it?
Fire.
So that's I'm going perfect. To do breath of fire every day. Would you say do it before my morning pages or after, Rose? The first thing I do usually after meditation in bed is my morning page.
I'd do it both ways and see how it, because just like what Julia was saying, you do get a shift in energy. You might find your morning pages quite different, but you might also find the practice quite different having done your morning pages. So try both and see.
Love it. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to take away as my rise and shine. And I will get back to you guys and let you know where I am with it. But thank you so much for that gift.
I just have to show you this before we go, Liz. Look what I bought for myself.
Oh, I love that. Where did you get that from?
For the listeners, I've found this beautiful poster that says Rise and Shine, and I put it in a frame.
And
it just sits next to where we record the pod. And this is
you got me that,
too.
Julia.
I know you do.
So I'm showing that Julia gave me this before we was it,
was it just, I think it was just before we were just about to start, I think.
We hadn't even started the podcast, have we? So she gave me one. And I bring this in because obviously my resilience course is called Rise Resilience. Mm. So I sometimes bring this into the classroom when I'm working with teenagers or when I'm doing one-to-ones, you know, as a positive psychology coach. And that's in the background too, my Rise and Shine. So I've got that here all the time. I've just knocked down me. Whoa, it's falling around.
But yeah, I just saw it, and I just walked past a little like little card and gift shop in Stockport, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, I have to have it.
So, yeah, that's a little sign
from the universe.
Oh, so Julia, will you do the same Rise and Shine?
I will do exactly the same. Yeah, definitely, because I love the sound of that practice. And
we invite our listeners to join in.
If you have any questions or you want to share your experience.
Oh, wonderful. And we'll post the links to where everyone can find your work, Rose, on the show notes.
Where can we find you on social, just off the top of while we're here?
I made a bit of a commitment to myself not to be on social media. On social, but I'm not showing up at the moment. Yeah. I'm not being very social. In fact, I'm being extremely anti-social.
Same. I'm like into maybe like a month off now. And
I won't say because I'm
but we'll certainly link your website and all the information
Definitely. And I urge people to check you out if you're interested in Rose or any of the work that Rose is doing. Honestly, she's amazing. Check her out.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for your time, Rose. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for everything you've given me as well.
And for everything you do with your wonderful Rise and Shine podcast. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to meet you, Julia.
Yeah, you too. It's been such a wonderful chat. And and thank you all for listening. And
thank you. Thanks a million. And see you again the next episode.
See you all very soon. Bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Thank you, Rose. Bye bye.